This is the Roster Report podcast from Patriots.com. Don't know who got cut? We do. Not sure who was signed to the practice squad? Yep, we know that too. The Roster Report is your weekly guide to keep up with the Patriots roster from top to bottom. And now, here to keep you informed, the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.
Well, it's Friday, April 10th here at Gillette Stadium. My three-year anniversary, Paul, here at this organization, this very day.
I wish we were announcing the transaction.
Well, because
waived Eric Scalabino.
Andy decided to take this podcast off, so I'm going to host it.
I was off last
today.
Week. You guys did a great job. I figured you guys could continue hosting for the various podcasts.
Sure, whatever. Anyway, no transactions again for the second week in a row.
I wouldn't anticipate too many moves being done between now and the draft. Would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Andy?
No.
Draft day?
Draft day, that's a different story.
That's a different story. But up until then, no, I don't think so. But that doesn't mean we don't have things to talk about, because in a room with these three egos, of course there's going to be stuff to talk about.
In a room with your ego. I didn't know we were celebrating your anniversary.
Anyway, reports today out of the Boston Globe about Ty Warren rehabbing from his multiple surgeries this offseason to fix his injured left and right groin and an abdominal muscle that I guess was disattached. So he had that, and the Globe talked to him. The Providence Journal talked to safety Tank Williams about his rehab from knee surgery.
A story Fred Kirsch very excited about.
Oh, he's been
about.
On top of that since day one, of course, yeah. And several reports this week about draft prospects visiting Gillette Stadium for their scheduled pre-draft visits. So we've got all of that to talk about in lieu of any transactions. So let's start with the defensive line, Ty Warren, Paul Perillo. Did you read today's story, and what did you think of Ty Warren's quotes about rehabbing from his surgeries?
Yeah, well, it's funny, and Andy and I were talking about this a little bit before we came down. It seems like there are a few guys with the Patriots that feel emboldened enough to talk about their injuries at length and in detail. Ty Warren's been one of them,
right?
And he did it last year. I actually talked to him at the very end of the season when he was on the radio station on WEEI after that appearance, and he was talking really openly about all the surgeries he was going to have. I think it's interesting. Now, we know that he was hurt last year. You could see that, especially down the stretch, he couldn't move.
Plus, he told us.
And he told us. But you could see it in his play, too, that he had a real hard time moving around. I do think it's interesting, and Andy brought up the point, you know, it's been all Seymour and Wilfork, and what are the Patriots going to do moving forward with those two expiring contracts? Ty Warren's contract is not close to expiring, but with these injuries and whatnot, I wonder how that factors into the entire defensive line, if there's any thoughts about maybe, beyond 09 in terms of Ty Warren as well.
Yep, and you mentioned Wilfork. About a month ago, he had let it be known that he was starting contract extension talks with the Patriots and was very encouraged that the talks had started. Ever since then, though, Andy, we haven't really heard anything new in that regard. Are you discouraged by not having heard anything?
No, not really. I mean, I think obviously, and we've talked about this a little bit on PFW in Progress, the Albert Haynesworth deal kind of broke the bank and probably added some figures to what Vince Wilfork will be looking for. Even though he is a little bit of a different type of player, when you're talking about an elite defensive lineman, the price went up because Albert Haynesworth's deal. So I think that's a factor. But I think we knew all along, it's going to take big money if you want to re-sign Vince Wilfork. It's just the way it is, and you kind of mix that factor in with the uncertainty of the labor situation and all that. I don't think we thought this was going to be an easy or quick negotiation, and I still don't. And I also think a lot of these happen after the draft, you know, kind of figure out what you're doing in the draft, how that plays out. Okay, we've passed that. We got our free agents in after the draft. Now we can focus on this contract and crunching numbers and things moving forward. So I don't think it's a bad sign in any way. I think we knew it was going to take a long time, and it wouldn't be easy because he's a rarity. He's a 3-4 nose tackle who is dominant in this scheme. He knows it. His agent knows it. The Patriots know it. It's going to take a little bit.
Quick prediction from each of you, starting with Andy. Do you think an extension for Wilfork will get done, and if so, when?
That's a great question, Eric. Barring the labor uncertainty, I think it would be a lock that it would be done before the season. Including the questions about the CBA and the future of the financial landscape in the league, I'm going to say it's 50-50.
Paul?
Yeah, I don't want to sound wishy-washy, but I sort of agree with Andy. I do think it's a kind of a 50-50 proposition. If it gets done, I think there's a dead period, you know, maybe after minicamp, the one mandatory minicamp in early June. You know, they have the golf tournament, I think, on June 8th, and then from the 10th to the 12th, I think they have a minicamp. From that period until training camp is really the only true downtime in the NFL. And I think a lot of the groundwork for these kinds of things gets done then, and I think that's why when they get to training camp, we hear about Mike Vrabel a few years ago, Jarvis Green a few years ago, these extensions that we had no idea were really in the works, all of a sudden they get done. That's when it would get done, if it does, but I agree with Andy. I think the labor uncertainty throws a monkey wrench into that. I don't think it gets done right now.
No. Okay. All right. Before we move on to some other things here, quickly back to Ty Warren, his prediction for when he might be able to return to action. This is a direct quote from the story today in the
Globe. From the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Directly. He actually even said those words. He said, I'm taking the approach that I'll be able to do some things in minicamp in June, that Paul just referred to. Hopefully I'm doing something then. Now, to what extent they allow me to do it and say I need to do something, that I don't know, but I'm taking that approach. That's just how I feel. My thoughts from my mouth, he said. So that's encouraging from Ty Warren. Now, another player who's working his way back from injury, we mentioned earlier, Tank Williams, our illustrious editor-in-chief, Fred Kirsch's favorite player, apparently on the roster. He's trying to make a comeback. This is now his third team, his third injury, major injury to his knees with each team that he's been on. He signed a one-year deal last year when he got here, sort of a kind of a prove-what-you-can-do type of deal. And he got hurt very early in camp, was put on IR, didn't really get to prove much, but he proved enough, apparently, that the team felt it worthy to bring him back. Paul, what do you think about his chances of contributing at all significantly to this team?
It's almost impossible to really gauge that. I think that we saw a lot of potential for some things last year in training camp. But with yet another serious injury, I don't know how he comes back from that. If he's able to come back from it and he can do the things that he talked about, you know, at minicamp and in training camp and going forward, I think there are enough jobs open in my mind in the secondary that he could fill one in some sort of hybrid role in nickel and dime packages. I think he'd be a valuable guy. If he's lost significant amount of athleticism and mobility, then no. But I just find it really tough to know how he comes off of yet another really, really devastating knee injury,
Andy,
in such a short period of time.
Sorry, Paul. Andy, given his history of injuries and the experiment that Paul referred to with them trying to have him play a little bit of inside linebacker and safety last year, do you think maybe they take the approach this year of trying to just let him focus on one thing, maybe stay in the defensive backfield, or do you think they're going to throw him back out there in the fire and try to make him do a lot of things?
I think he will be in that hybrid role again because I don't think he's good enough or athletic enough at this point to be a every down safety or just a safety. His value will come in his versatility and his sub-package roles. I think this is one of those cases where there's no risk and there's potential for a reward. You bring him to camp, you certainly aren't counting on him for anything, but if he just is healthy and wins a roster spot, you've already invested time in him. So there's a small investment there in terms of time and reps last year. Why not give him the chance? You're going to need camp bodies. If he ends up being a camp body, well, thanks, Tank. Thanks for the time. But if he's back to full health, maybe he can make the roster because, as Paul said, there's not a lot of depth in the secondary there. If Rodney Harrison's not back, you're kind of missing that hybrid guy that he's been over the years in terms of goal line and sub package linebacker slash safety. So why not? What's the risk? Nothing.
So to sum it up on these guys who are already on the roster, we think Ty Warren will be back to his old self by the time he's fully healed and will contribute significantly as he has in the past. Tank Williams, the jury's still out. Can we agree on that?
Could be on the street or could be on the roster come September.
Yeah, and I agree with Andy. It is a perfect high reward, low risk proposition with Tank Williams.
Okay, so those are two guys who are on the roster, under contract. We know about them. Now to some guys who may be on the roster later this year, later this month even, when the NFL draft rolls around. The league allows teams to have about 30 official visits with draft prospects prior to the draft, and there are some reports this week that the Patriots have been doing that and or scheduling visits with certain players. The name that sticks out the most, I think, in our minds is West Virginia quarterback Pat White, who many people see as the prototypical Wildcat-type player who can not only run and you know, act like a sort of a quarterback in the backfield. But unlike some of the other players, like Ronnie Brown, is primarily a quarterback who can also run, whereas Brown was a running back who might have a chance to throw now and then. White is an established passer whose athletic ability running with the ball has been proven during his years in Morgantown. What do you guys think about this? There's been a lot of smoke about Pat White and the interest that the Pats have in him. Do you think it's legitimate, either of you guys?
Well, I think it has to be because, if I'm not mistaken, he doesn't have any injury concerns, and they've now not only reportedly going to host him here at the stadium, but had a private workout elsewhere, which you can do as many as you want. So they're using a limited workout here to follow up on something else that they saw in the private workouts, and yet I don't believe it can be an injury because I believe he's healthy. I also don't believe he's a guy that has a ton of character flaws or red flags in that area. So unless it's simply a smoke screen, which is, you know, the sort of the different areas people speculate as to why teams hold visits, you'd have to think it's legitimate interest. We spoke about it with again, Fred Kirsch on PFW in Progress, and he is concerned that it'd be too high a pick if you take a guy like White in the second round. But we also speculated, well, maybe these workouts are to see what else he can do. We know he can play quarterback out of the Wildcat because that's what he did at West Virginia. Can he be a slot receiver? Give him multiple workouts, catching passes, running routes, making sure one just wasn't a good day where he happened to catch everything, and maybe that increases his value in your system. So in my mind, there has to be a legitimate interest in Pat White on some level, and maybe that level is even beyond a Wildcat option.
Paul, given how many times we've seen players who are drafted and are subsequently asked, oh, how much contact did you have with that particular team prior to the draft? And their response is surprisingly often, not at all. The first time I heard from them was on draft day when they called me. How much stock do you put into these pre-draft visits?
Well, obviously it's not a true indicator one way or the other. I think there have been plenty of guys, like you said, that have had little to no contact with the Patriots, and then plenty of guys, like this case with Pat White, where they went to West Virginia to work him out, he came to Foxborough to work out, and I'm sure that they talked at the Combine. You know, there's no way of really knowing. I don't think there's a roster of contact to know with all the previous draft picks. I think in this case in particular, though, I think that there is a reason that you would want multiple meetings with a guy that you're looking to do something a little bit outside of the box with. And I think regardless of how they choose to use Pat White, it won't be conventionally. It's not going to be under the center as a true quarterback for three downs for every play of a game. I don't think they see that in his future, but they might see him, as Andy said, as a slot receiver, maybe even as a defensive back, in addition to kind of a change of pace Wildcat quarterback. So it doesn't surprise me that they've looked at him several times in different on different avenues, and it wouldn't surprise me if they ended up the interest was genuine when it's all said and done.
So Pat White, the potential maybe to play receiver in this Pats offense as well as the Wildcat stuff. But there are a couple of receivers that we know the Pats have interest in because they're coming for visits, and they're both teammates at North Carolina. Brooks Foster, Brandon Tate. Andy, after watching the tapes, seeing them at the Combine, what are your thoughts on these two guys?
I think Tate is interesting, and his visit is probably a medical one because he's an injury guy, knee ligament injuries last year, because he's a guy who can return. And I said this to Paul, the first thing I saw from him, he reminded me of Deion Branch, a thicker Deion Branch, in the way he was kind of quick and had some shiftiness. And the fact that he returns adds some value there. So I'm intrigued by Tate. You know, again, we never know the health situation, how far returned they are, how that increases their value if they're back quicker or decreases it if they're kind of slow to come back. But I think he's an interesting guy to keep an eye on.
And, Paul, last on the list here of reported visits.
Better be a guy I know.
It's a guy we know. It's a guy we might have even run into when we were out in California last year. San Jose State defensive end Jerron Gilbert.
Best known
as
the pool jumper,
as the pool jumper on YouTube. If you're not familiar with the story, just go to YouTube and type in Jerron, that's two R's, Gilbert, and you'll see some amazing video of him jumping out of the shallow end of a pool. But he was a guy that fans had asked us about during the season because they put the two and two together with the Pats trained out at San Jose State. This guy is known for his intense workouts. Is there any interest? And now it looks like there is some legitimate interest there.
Yeah, I don't know what how much there's legitimate interest or not, but I will say that the three of us spoke immediately about being out at San Jose State on two different weeks with a coaching staff that they obviously felt pretty happy and comfortable with and being around. And it wouldn't surprise me if there are some draft-eligible guys from San Jose State that the Patriots would be interested in. And as luck turns out, there are a few. This is one of them. There's a couple of defensive backs that are also kind of on the radar, you know, in terms of the draft and we're at the combine that you guys got to see when you were out in Indy. I don't know a lot about Gilbert specifically other than the, you know, the freakish athleticism.
And he's kind of a riser.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just the freakish athleticism.
I don't know either.
He'd probably be an end here. Based on, I think he's like 6'5", 290.
So oh, 5 probably, technique.
They probably, yes, Paul.
Okay.
They probably ask him to bulk up a little bit and be an end, and that kind of ties into what we talked about earlier with Seymour's uncertain future. And we've speculated all along that while it's not an immediate need, and on paper it's very deep heading into the next year with Mike Wright returning, Jarvis Green still here, and obviously the three first-round picks still here.
And even Lee Kevin-Smith, who could play both. Kevin,
right.
You know?
But down the road, if all of a sudden Seymour may be gone and Will Fork, you're in a fight for your life to keep him if he hits free agency, you maybe need to add some youth to it, and Gilbert's a guy that maybe would fit that, as Paul said, five technique that Seymour fulfills
Paul's
so well.
Paul's our resident draft expert.
He is.
Did you know that?
He
that
is.
Was from, I should probably explain, the gentleman that we contacted from Pittsburgh to do the writer's mock draft was, you know, kind of breaking down the defensive lineman. Oh, he's more of a five technique, which
for the pre-draft issue of
which means a defensive end in a 3-4, and that's what Andy was talking about.
So we've come full circle with this podcast. We started out talking about defensive line. We ended talking about defensive line. We've got a lot of stuff in here in a week where there have been no transactions for the Pats, second week in a row where that's happened. Maybe there'll be something next week, but as Paul said earlier, this time of year, it's
tough. I wouldn't
be
surprised if there's not.
But
we'll
even,
talk about
even
something.
If there's not, we'll be here to talk about it next week on this podcast. And, of course, our next draft prospect review podcast where we
preview
the prospects will be this coming Wednesday. But until then, have a happy Easter weekend and Passover weekend, everybody. Peace out.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from Patriots.com. Log on anytime for more news and more podcasts from your favorite team and Patriots.com.